Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, Egg Chasers. This is the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. We're just here in the Rugby Dungeon for another weekend, talking about Six Nations. We've got two podcasts this week, this one all about the Six Nations. Merry Sixmas again, gentlemen. JB?
Merry Sixmas. How are you, Timothy?
Oh, very well, thank you. I'm all right. I'm feeling okay.
I'm feeling buoyant.
Yeah, I'm all right. Yeah, I'm content. And Merry Sixmas, Philip.
Merry Sixmas, Tim.
Do you think Phil's still, hair is still Nicola Sturgeon-esque? I think he might well have moved on to, I think, you know the episodes of The Simpsons where you see a young Homer?
Oh, really?
I think he might be at young Homer level.
I can see that. I was thinking a less blonde Pat Butcher.
It's the longest it's been for a while.
Yes, quite.
I've got slightly less facial hair than Pat Butcher.
Yes,
bigger earrings though. It's lovely to see you, Phil. I thought we might not.
We almost didn't. My wife is currently in very early stages of labour, although she's been in very early stages of labour for about 36 hours now. And were it not for her amazing parents coming over from Preston to watch over her and rub her back and
they wanted to make sure the pod could happen.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, I had to stand down Jono Ross today for you. He was about to come over. I said, no, Jono, Phil's coming. So well done you.
I appreciate it.
And did you, in amongst contractions, get to watch the rugby?
Fortunately, I got to watch it all. Absolutely.
Lovely.
Every second of it, because I couldn't really go anywhere.
Yeah, you'll have other children, but you won't have other experiences of that exact match live.
Oh, tell me about it. Some interesting games. Enjoyed the first half of the first game, hated the second game, and loved the first half of the third game.
So I missed the first game completely. I've not seen any. I've seen highlights, sort of, but I really haven't seen much of it. I thought the Wales game was dross.
It was dreadful.
I mean, it was garbage. All-round garbage.
I've not checked the numbers, but that has to be the most direct kicks into touch in a game that I've ever seen.
Dreadful.
Just the standard was awful.
And from a guy awful. Like Bigger as well.
I mean, I know.
You know, he is some player. And actually, Italy as well. I mean, hang your head in shame. Why do I give people the benefit of the doubt? You never should you? You never should. I looked at the Italy pack. I thought, you know, if you're going to do something, boys, today is the day.
Yeah.
And that Welsh pack they're up against, I mean, they were almost as unimpressive. Almost. No bite, no nothing. So, yeah.
We've got a lot to churn over. Don't forget, you can find us at Rugby Podcast on Twitter, or on Facebook, on Instagram, YouTube. And thank you very much for listening. Tell your mates. We're going to get into, obviously, the three Six Nations games in this one. We have already got a bunch of questions and a bunch of thoughts, so I'll try and pepper those throughout the podcast. But I was sort of thinking, where do you want to start, Phil? Where do you want to start?
Do you want to do it chronologically? I think
no one wants to talk about Wales. Okay?
Well, yeah. There's nothing.
Tim wants to talk about the Irish fans. We can do that. Tim versus Ireland. No. But I think everyone wants to talk about England.
Yeah, everyone wants to talk about England. In particular, I think a lot of people will be tuned in. Having heard last week when England put in arguably the best performance since the last... Well, the best performance in a long time. Since
Probably their, since Australia. One of their best performances in the last 4 years.
Yeah, certainly.
Yeah, yeah.
after that.
Probably last 8 years.
Having heard that, and you said, look, actually, England, you need to be worried. You need to be worried, England.
I still believe this.
Right. Okay. So,
I've got
an idea. You can defend your continued pursuit of what has gone from downfall 2018 to downfall 2019. But this time, because England was so dominant once again, see if you can do it. If you can actually put a coherent argument together and it makes sense even over this music, then I think fair enough.
Go. Lol. No, I can't do it over this music, Tim, I think is the honest answer.
That music was playing when Uge was positioning, wasn't it?
Oh, my word.
When he was lining up at the 15.
Let me just ask a question about Uge, right? You're down by 30 points. If you overturn this deficit, you would have actually overturned the greatest deficit in Six Nations history.
Yeah. Wales did that last week.
Yeah, which happened to France last week, right? So it can happen.
It can.
Why get rid of him? I mean, you're not going to win. Why not just let him tough it out and have the worst day of his life?
Well, I remember when I saw the teams, I thought, this is going to go very, very well, surprisingly well, or more likely, extremely badly for Jacques Brunel. Because having watched England against Ireland win the gain line and then dominate with their tactical kicking, he picked a wing at fullback and two centres on the wing.
Yes.
I mean, Uge does have a good amount of experience at fullback, to be fair.
Does he?
Yeah, he's got a reasonable
amount, but the two...
It just wasn't good enough.
Well, the two starting to lose fullbacks are... Machinaud.
Medard
and Ramos.
Yeah.
So they're the guys with the most experience for Toulouse.
I mean, he's
the third choice
wild
behind
card, wasn't it? Because even when when he's going forward, he's still very, very good.
The Pernod try was all Uge. It was the strength and the speed. Yeah. And the slipperiness.
And Pernod is very good, I think. I think he's got... Watching Pernod play against May reminded me of watching Johnny May play against himself when he first showed up. Like, loads of raw talent, loads of wheels. He might even be a bit stronger. But Johnny May, he just dominated him. He absolutely dominated him.
It shows the experience that May has got now.
Yeah.
Because, I mean...
And this is why you were wrong, actually. Because you said he was consistently world-class. No, now he's consistently world-class.
Now he is consistently world-class.
Yeah. Before he wasn't.
Before he was inconsistently world-class.
That's exactly right.
Phil was a Johnny May hipster. He was into him well before ahead. He was popular.
Well ahead of trend.
Exactly.
Slightly too far ahead of trend, I might add.
But I wanted to... Let's get Johnny May into complete Brexit negotiations because that man can finish a job.
Yeah.
Forget Theresa. Get Johnny May in.
But that Brunel... So we said about contractual stability last week and keeping key pairings together. And unfortunately, because Maxime Medard. God, why can I not... I'm a bit sleep deprived this weekend.
Mamoz
and
Medard. Okay.
Wolverine. So he was unfortunately injured, so they couldn't in the back three. But they changed so much about that team. But exactly as you said before, Tim, the one thing given England's astute tactical kicking last week that you don't want to mess about with is your back three.
Here's what I don't get. Is at Talk H we play games and it'll be like 7 versus 7 or, well, actually, with our training numbers, you know, usually 15 on 15. But anyway, let's not get into that. I don't want to talk about, you know, how well attended the Top H training is. I don't want to do that.
There we go.
But, you know, you play a game and if you can kick to space, you get the ball back. And quite rapidly, at level 7 or wherever we are now, people adjust to it. The fact that France did not adjust to it, they didn't just not adjust to it. It's like they refused it. It's like they decided England will not go through us, and they didn't. But the trade-off will be they can kick behind us whenever they want.
Well, you've exactly hit the nail on the head, although you haven't completed the circle there, because the reason England didn't go through them, although England still won the gain line, they were absolutely ferocious. They won the collisions on the whole, and yeah, they did. They did. And England were ferocious, won the collisions, didn't make clean breaks through France, but that's because France had 13 or 14 men in their defensive line. As a result, there's space elsewhere. If France had dropped another man or two back, England would have gone round them.
I don't know if they would have, actually. I mean, The problem I have with this England performance, it is not like the Ireland performance, right? The Ireland performance was actually dominant. That was the sort of performance that you could win a World Cup on. If that was like a World Cup final today, you could win a World Cup on that potential performance. Problem with the France game is it's almost like there wasn't even enough test of England to show us any more. I mean, there was just nothing there.
I kind of agree with that to an extent. You can only play the team that's in front of you.
Yeah.
And because England were given so much time and opportunity, with their, they got such massive returns every time they kicked in behind that there was no need for them to do anything else. No,
why would you?
Yeah, I'm watching it and I'm thinking like, oh, England aren't, you know, England haven't played well. I still don't think they played well because they haven't been able to break down the French team, you know,
Wait, please.
Then I'm kind of with you boys and thinking, well, why should they? Because unnecessary.
But my point is that they did. This is England. You watch the game again. The way I watched it, and I don't think I was watching it one-eyed.
No, well, I wouldn't imagine that you'd do that.
I was, because I was very much cheering England on, but I was trying to be objective at the same time. England won the collisions. They had quicker ball again, just like last week, on attack, because Tom Curry and Mark Wilson have been absolutely immense. They slowed down France enough. The point being, Owen Farrell had an armchair ride because they won the collisions, but Owen Farrell just was tactically world class.
I actually think the guy who was who set it all up for England was not Owen Farrell, but a guy who I've given a lot of stick to of late, which is Ben Youngs. I thought it was his box kicking that set the whole thing off, and you know that sort of set the tempo for the opening try. The only time England had any sort of possession whatsoever, as in like sustained pressure, France marched them back 20 meters.
Right.
Ben Youngs box kicked. Who was it? The fullback knocks it on. England score again. That's the only thing I'm going to say. It was a great win because they played what was in front of them. Wasn't enough tests.
So are you saying that you can only truly call yourself a great performance if you win and have the majority of possession?
No, I'm saying you can only win and call it a great performance if you're great against great opposition like Ireland.
Okay.
Do you not agree with that?
Well, no. I hear what you're saying, but all I'm saying is, it isn't just coincidental that France were particularly poor when they played England. Is my point is the two aren't unrelated. France were really, really poor, and they're playing against an England team who were ferocious. And I mean, there was one moment that probably summarised the whole game for me, and it was Courtney Laws smashing back Mathieu Bastereau. They brought him into the side to try and get them this go forward. And that summed up the England pack. They were like having none of it. Yeah, you send your biggest man right down our channel, we're going to smash you backwards. That's what they did. And as a result, Owen Farrell had an armchair ride, unlike Johnny Sexton last week and this week against Scotland, where he's under all kinds of pressure.
Yeah, but even the attack, right? I mean, there were some stages of that game where England didn't deal particularly well with the French offloading game. If just French mistakes. The mistake count from the French was astronomical.
But why was the mistake?
Well, I mean, no, this is English pressure, right?
Their mistakes don't exist in a vacuum.
Well, in this case, they probably do because they're breaking the line. what's his name? How do you say his name? Arthur
Itteria,
who is one hell of a skillful player, throws the ball forward. That, you know, that first break from Dupont when he comes on, they are carving England up. They throw the ball forward. There was one from Bastereau, he just misses the hands of Picamoles. They just throw the ball forward.
I mean, Bastereau had a 2-on-1 and throws it into touch. There was some real bad basics, but there was a lot that was down to England pressure.
They were still. I mean, when England did really well against them, and when it's night and day between these two teams, it's when they need to be organised and structured. So there's a period of the game where France are on the England 5-metre line. You think, well, they're big runners, and they've sort of easily carved up England to get to here, and they just throw the ball forward. It's when it becomes all structured that they're terrible.
But equally, there's one little thing that you should look out for, and that is the speed at which England are... Well, one, England kept the ball in field for most of the game. They hardly ever kicked a touch. Secondly, when they did kick to touch and England had a line out, they were going as quick as they could to get the ball gone again. There was a number of times where where the cameramen missed the actual ball being thrown in because England was getting set and going so fast.
Didn't they throw it in and pick them all, smash someone?
I don't know, but my point being that that's clearly a tactic to go, we got this big bunch of lads, we are going to run them off their feet. So, like under fatigue and under duress, the basics can go, and I think that's what you're describing there is they were battered. They were battered.
I don't think they were physically battered. I think they were mentally destroyed. I think they were tactically outgunned. I mean, it was honestly, it was like watching men against boys in terms of tactics. I think physically, you know, France held it pretty well, but tactically it was rubbish.
So I've got a question for you.
Please.
So last week you spoke about England only having one way of playing.
Yeah, I thought about this.
And the way that you certainly referred to last week was big ball carriers.
Yes.
And you said if they lose Billy, Mako, Manu, they won't be able to replicate what they did.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how much... Because there's a question that this week's performance was purely based on, for me, a tactical kicking game. They got parity... Or better than parity in other areas, but their tactical kicking was so far ahead of anything that France could control. Now, that to me is a different way of playing.
Yeah, it is. And but is it a different way of playing? Like, for instance, if they left a 10-metre gap in midfield and never closed it and they just carried on letting you run through it, as in you'd be daft not to take that. It's sort of like a gift that they've given you, but without you really deserving it.
But going back to what I said a little bit earlier, if France did adjust and drop men back, then I think Owen Farrell would have clocked that, Ashton, Johnny May would have clocked that, and the ball would have gone in different places.
So maybe.
I think there is...
I mean,
there
we
is,
don't know, but maybe. Yeah, they could have.
There is an element of the point you're making, which is France was so woefully inept, it would have been stupid for England not to exploit it.
Yeah, exactly.
But in the Ireland game, certainly two of the tries were brilliant back strike moves.
Yeah.
And it was phenomenally executed. The
one-off first phase.
Yeah.
Look, the Ireland game, right, you can look at as a template for how England want to go forward. All I'm saying about the France game is I don't think you learn any more about England from this game. All the learning was done last game.
Well, yeah, and that's kind of where my point is, because after the last game, you were quite clear that you think England have only got one way of playing.
Yeah, beat people up.
But in that game, they showed, well, I'd probably argue three distinct tactics, all of which contributed to that, which was beating people up, going wide, and tactical kicking, intelligent tactical kicking. This, we kind of saw two of them. We didn't really need to see three of them. But it's just, I guess my issue is the argument that they have only got one way of playing is kind of silly, because in the game that you chose to pick that, they clearly demonstrated three separate ways of playing.
No, because the Ireland game, it all comes from that dominant ball carrying. So, it does. It absolutely does.
It was England slowing down Ireland's ball. It was just...
The England game plan fundamentally is big ball carrying and incredibly hard work. But that is basically it. Now, once you've got your big ball carriers and you've outworked everyone, everything opens up.
Exactly.
But you've got to establish that first.
Yeah, I know.
So that is the England game plan.
Well, so that is, yes, that is. And they did it again today. The word I used to describe it was ferocious. And as a result, as I said, Owen Farrell had time, space, and the wherewithal to look up, see what was around, and make the right choices, as he did last week. The last 2 weeks.
Yeah, but France, I mean,
he has been world class.
Yeah, but France made more metres than England. I don't think you're right on that. I don't think you're right that England were dominant in the collisions, simple as that.
Okay.
And I don't think that, because actually, if you look at the stats, like meters made, for instance, France actually somehow in a 44
meters made doesn't tell you anything.
It doesn't tell you about dominant collisions.
Well, it kind of tells you that they made more yards. There is something in that.
Yeah, it tells you, but it doesn't tell you anything about dominant collisions.
Maybe it doesn't.
In terms of collisions,
I definitely think that France, England, in terms of the collisions, were roughly on par.
Things that pop out into my mind are people like, again, Carl Sinclair and Jamie George making amazing ball carries, getting well over the gain line. Again, Mark Wilson and Tom Curry enabling really quick ball and slowing down France's. And people like Courtney Laws absolutely smashing France to bits in a way that no France player did to an English player.
No, look, Courtney Laws made a big, a classic Courtney Laws hit on Bastro. And everyone's saying, look, this sums up the game. Actually, I think Bastro had a pretty good game, particularly in defence. Where the French problems are, it's in the backfield. I mean, it doesn't take a genius to work this out. Everything else is secondary.
All right,
to it.
Okay, fair enough.
It is.
You seem to think that one part of the game exists in a vacuum, unrelated to the rest of it.
Of course, I don't think that. It's all a fluid ebb and flow. Of course, I don't think that. That's a ridiculous thing. But like, for instance, England didn't even get the ball going. I mean, they had some good opportunities to really get a driving maul, attack France that way. You would expect them to do something else like that.
All right, here's a hypothetical. If but along the lines of what you're saying, if you swap the two back threes, France would have won the game.
Oh, tell you what, if France had...
No, just hypothetically, you swap the two back threes.
Don't even swap the back threes. Throw in a Lee Halfpenny and you've got a very, very different game.
Right. Okay.
Good.
So I could not disagree more. So I don't necessarily entirely disagree with that. I think if you'd have had some better positioning for the back three, it would have been a closer game. I still think England on that performance would have won fairly comfortably.
It becomes a different game then. Completely different game.
It does.
And actually, it might turn into the game that we had. I think that's where the England... What maybe England were looking back at is what happened last year when we played against France. Well, we got absolutely beaten up around the contact area. So maybe, actually, I am proving myself wrong here by saying, yeah, that they did play that different way because they kicked so astutely tactically.
I may be completely wrong on this, but I imagine there are a fair number of people listening thinking, why is JB trying to triple down?
I'm not. what is the triple down position?
Like, somehow that wasn't impressive. Somehow it was all down to France being poor rather than England being excellent. Just as last week it was good, but.
Well, I guess your options.
This is what happens when you say downfall 2018 and you aren't willing to go.
It's 2019.
It's downfall 2019. when you're not able to go. Do you know what? How ridiculous do I sound now? Just say that.
No, because I know that's a very nice story for you, but frankly, what you're trying to say is either this is the best team for England in 100 years, because this is the best result against France in 100 years, or this is a woefully inept French display, and I think it's a woefully inept French display.
But it could be both. It could be a little from column A and a little from column B.
Two things can be true, and one can be the cause of the other.
Okay. Let's just go back to... No, because if you go back to last week, I'm happy to say that this was... last week was a tremendous England performance.
However, you couldn't bring yourself to say full stop. It had to be but. Yeah. Here's why I'm still right, and watch next week.
No, but there is always a but, right? And... if you look at the Ireland performance, okay, there is very little between the Ireland performance and how England dominated Australia when they win three tests in a row. Very, very little. It's the same sort of game plan. So, that's basically where I am. And this game hasn't taught us anything more about England.
Right.
I mean, you can grandstand and say...
Oh, my God, how can you say that? Yes, it has. Because I'll actually do a magnanimous thing and I'll do what you can't do. And I'll say,
thank you, Tim.
And I'll say, I was completely.
Allow me to learn.
I was completely wrong on one thing, and that France game cemented to me how wrong I was on Elliot Daly not being an international fullback. In the context of this England team, he 100% is. And the reason I say that is when you have a team that is so ferocious at the gain line and forces the opposition to make kicks when they're under pressure and under duress, as Conor Murray and Johnny Sexton were forced to last week, and as France's back Parra and Lopez were forced to this week, that means he's going to have broken field to run into. And also, for that first try, the way that he came onto Ben Youngs's pass, spotted the opportunity, and I reckon if it was Mike Brown, he would have put his head down and just run straight, and probably made a good run, but gone straight. Elliot Daly, footwork, jinked, saw a bit of space, kicked it through, Johnny May scored. So I'm totally wrong on Elliot Daly.
Well done! Very magnanimous.
So it's interesting, actually, that on the back three, England's back three, now, this is going to sound a little bit stupid, but I don't think they came into the game anywhere near as much as I thought they might. And the reason I say that, so that daily break for the first May try was absolutely superb. And Johnny May obviously got a hat-trick. Ashton got at least one assist, could have got a couple of tries. But the person who was receiving the ball most at 15, when they were kicking to France and then putting pressure on France, and France were putting awkward kicks back, the guy receiving the ball most in that deep position was actually Owen Farrell.
Yeah.
And Owen Farrell was playing so deep because it was working so well. And then kind of my wife laughs at me when she's watching me. She watches me watching rugby. And if it's a team that I'm supporting, so England or Ulster, one of the things that I will always unconsciously start muttering to myself if someone kicks the ball is, you've got to find grass, you've got to find grass, you've got to find grass. And the amount of space and the amount of grass that Owen Farrell was finding was just incredible.
It was amazing.
But you found...
It was amazing.
We've all played rugby to A level, whatever level it is, but there are truths which exist across all levels, but international more so. You can only make those little prods, you can only make those, oh, look up, oh, there's a bit of space, take that kick, if you are winning the ball and the collisions, which England did. And that's why I maintain that's how the last 2 weeks, that's the consistent between the last 2 weeks. They're so ferocious that Owen Farrell's just in an
so the
armchair,
only thing
right? and Ben Young's.
So the only thing
right?
that we disagree with, right, is that we agree that England won all the collisions against Ireland, and that's where all the successful kicking came from, and that's where all of the panic came from Ireland for their terrible kicking.
And that's the parallel I draw between last week and this
week.
But
actually, I don't even think England needed to do that, and I don't think that they did. And that's the only difference. Other than that, it was a very solid England display. They did exactly what they needed to win. For me, it's not really about... This game is not about England. It's about France, and where do they go? All the questions now... on the shoulders of France. Like, it's a travesty of rugby.
That is a good question, actually. So when you were chalking up on the whiteboard, France to
win the Six Nations, yeah.
Did you mean
win the wooden spoon?
Can I just say, there is a small silver lining to this, which is I actually did back myself and put a bet on for France to win the Six Nations.
Should have waited and betted now.
No, this is no word of a lie. This is no word of a lie. I put on the wrong bet. So my betting count actually has France to come last in the Six Nations. So I might have actually managed to get myself into a very favourable position here.
That wooden spoon playoff against in Rome against Italy.
Yeah.
Just a
question on on your prediction. So we watched the England game together in Madrid last year, England France.
Yes, we did.
Yeah,
which was a dominant performance by France.
It was.
We have watched several other France performances together. They've won, going into the tournament, they'd won 3 in the last 16 games. What inspired you to pick this French team with this coaching setup and this set of leadership on the back of 3-16 to win the Six Nations?
So, I'm actually semi sort of rosy about France still. So, on the one hand, I say it's a travesty of rugby.
It is a travesty, right? I'm with you on that.
But what else can you do with them? So I don't think you can get a foreign coach. A lot of Twitter lit up and said, get Gatland in there, get Schmidt in there, get whoever it is in there. I don't think you can do it, because I don't think they understand how the French play. That's the first thing. And also, French rugby isn't intrinsically bad. We know this because we see some really good teams like Racing, who are about as French as you possibly can get, albeit with a couple of world superstars in there too. But they've always got like a Classens in there, or, you know, there's a lot of French players that still play for Racing.
They've got a good sprinkling of foreign talent
yeah,
as
but
well.
If you watch how they play, it's all brutal around the sides of the rucks, lots of offloads. I mean, it's very, very French.
They are just a very good... They're a modern rugby team, I'd say. Rather than identifying those as French, they do everything. You don't get to top the Heineken Cup final last year.
There's a game I was watching this season, I thought, wow, that's pretty cool how they just break the line, offload. And that's what France have got to do.
That is good. Yeah, now, that is good Frenchness.
I do not know of a coach in the Southern Hemisphere, or an Anglophile, if you want, who understands that style of rugby well enough to go in there and get the best out of France. And I think if you're to rip it up and give them a Warren Gatland, though, kind of like what happened to Bernard Jackman at Grenoble. There's going to be an absolute uproar. There's going to be, you know, a revolt, blood running in the street. You know, it's just not going to happen. So it needs to be a French coach. Now, when it goes right, it's spectacular. Even today, with everything that went wrong, and the score, you did see bits like
the one try.
The one try was
superb. You know, that for me was about it.
Dupont's break as soon as he comes on.
Yeah, Dupont and Girardot made a couple of good breaks, but the fact that you make those good breaks, there's probably two Girardos and one Dupont.
Well, I've got three,
and you don't finish them off. So yes. It's a 1 in 4 strike rate. That is just international rugby. That is unacceptable.
So like, they can break the line and they can offload. And I just wonder, like, do they just need more time? Because the talent's there. And everyone says that it's not there. Maybe these players aren't as good as you say they are.
No.
These players are as good as we think. The talent is there. I just think they need more time together as a unit, maybe. I don't know.
Jumping back to England, I'm still not getting ahead of myself. I know there's a long, long way to go. And a big test is going to be in Cardiff. Huge. And obviously a World Cup is a different matter altogether.
It did seem like some of the pundits were getting a little bit ahead of themselves.
Yeah, definitely. It does feel like that's starting to crank up again. I'm definitely not. However, there's a few things. One, Daly at fullback, I'm fine with that. Although the Cardiff test, he's definitely going to get tested.
That is the one.
That's the test of him. Agree. So I'm not completely saying, because I think that would be a perfect Mike Brown occasion. However, if England can be that dominant physically again, I think it'll be all right. The centres is looking like it's shaping up, and even if Teo comes in and Tuilagi's injured again, I'm quite happy with that. Slade looks like he might have answered that. Again, a really, really competent performance. And the other one, and again, if you think back about all the umming and ahhing and how many people said Farrell shouldn't play 10, oh my goodness me, he is the best 10 on the planet. Right now.
It's between
today.
He's
the best planet 10 on the planet today.
Well, Johnny Sexton has not been Johnny Sexton.
No.
For two games.
Yeah. I mean, look, if you're going to put your house on
one of which he only played 30 minutes.
If you're going to put your house on it right now, would you pick Farrell as your first choice number 10?
Yes.
I'm still going Sexton all day long on that one.
I probably am still going Sexton, but it's very, very, very close. I think these two Farrell performances, and I think you pointed out on Twitter, Tim, the fact that, so I was terrified of Farrell being made captain, because I've seen him before where the pressure's come onto him and he's crumbled and he's done stupid things, and the stupid things that Owen Farrell does, the belligerent, the backbiting, the mouthing off at the referee, the no arms tackles, that kind of stupid thing. And it seems in a similar way to when Eddie made Dylan Hartley captain 3 years ago. It actually seemed to calm him down a little bit, and Dylan Hartley went for this long stint without doing anything stupid, without getting a yellow card.
Without playing for Northampton?
That's still ongoing, current position.
I think Eddie Jones seems very zen compared to how he normally is at the minute as well.
It's when he's winning. Yeah. For the first 12 months, he was the happiest bloke in rugby. And he had a bit of sport with, when journalists were asking him hard questions, he'd have a bit of sport with them and laugh at them. Whereas last year, during the JB downfall period,
yeah, you're right,
he was not taking it well. Nope. And they were getting on top of him, and he was really biting back.
Not to go all ground. When they were really, really good, I bought into them big time. And the day that it sort of came crashing down was when we're all in Romania watching Ireland, England. And then that plan failed, and then it sort of went downhill from there, sort of. They are back to being as good as they were. I just don't think they're undefeatable.
All right.
So they're definitely not undefeatable. And the bit that I have, and we kind of alluded to there. So in Cardiff, it will be very, very different. And part of the reason why I say it will be very different is having a fullback like Liam Williams compared to either Uge or Henshaw as kind of stand-in auxiliary fullbacks. So he's a fullback who reads the game brilliantly well.
He does.
He is rapid and will pick a gap, but he's also not got a bad boot on him. So that will have to change that England's reliance on kicking that they have for the last two games. It'll be interesting to see how they cope with that.
So let's imagine we're in the we're in the Wales war room at the minute, and we are Warren Gatland, Robin McBride, and who else is? What's his name?
Rob Howley.
All right, Han.
No, it's not. Rob Howley still there?
Rob Howley's.
Oh yeah. And what's his face? Yeah. Oh, English, Northerner, Rugby League.
Sean Edwards. Sean Edwards, yeah.
Well, hang on. Well, you know what happens in that war room? Everyone shuts up and Gatland gets to work. That's it, isn't it? Gatland gets to work.
What's Gatland telling the others that they're going to do?
I don't know, but it's going to be fiendishly clever. Gatland is 100% the man to undo Eddie Jones. I don't think he has the team to do it. And I think when battle is joined, if England show up like they did against Ireland, it's going to be a heavy day for Wales.
Here's one for me. Like, I don't know exactly how they do it, but they've got to get to Ben Youngs.
Yeah,
because he's had two good games, and England have played very well. And he is the one that quite often when England don't play well, you go, God, Ben Youngs.
He's a good barometer for England.
Absolute shocker. Yeah,
yeah,
100%.
I agree with that.
And he's had two of his best games that I've seen him play. I've ever seen him play, actually.
And if there's one area, if there's one position where you think Wales actually have got the manpower to unsettle, it would be the back row unsettling a scrum half.
Yeah, but the back row, I mean, their options are limited now with all the injuries. Navidi is a good club player.
They've got Tipperick.
Tipperick is a world-class operator.
Exactly.
Who else?
Moriarty is a good workhorse.
Yeah. I mean, look, if you said it's going to be Tipperick... Moriarty, Faletau. All of a sudden, I'm rubbing my hands and thinking, it's on. It's good. It's on. But that isn't what they're going to put out.
And I think they're going to box kick the shit out of it.
Yeah.
I think they'll start bigger. I think there'll be boxes and bombs, and there'll be a very ferocious kick chase. It's interesting because just moving off England for a second, moving on to Wales, I don't want to talk about that game particularly.
No.
But the selections were very interesting. And I read a piece, it was a little while ago, and it was an interview with Nicky Butt when he was obviously playing for Man United. So one of the things he said was, because he was in the great teams of United, but he was never really starting in the great teams for United.
Mm.
But he was talking about Ferguson would have a word with him. And he wouldn't be talking about like one game in advance or two games in advance. He'd be looking at kind of three games in advance, and we've got this special role and this special tactics for three or four games in advance, and you are going to be absolutely critical and key to that particular game plan. And when the Gatland selection against Italy, picking the second string, reminded me a little bit of that. And it reminded me, Gatland's focus this weekend was not on Italy.
No.
His focus, the whole squad's focus, will be on that England team, the way that England team has played, and where Wales' strengths can be to defeat that England
team. They're not in the group stages together,
no.
Are they?
England and France are.
England and France.
Wales and Australia are. Ireland, Scotland. Is South Africa, New Zealand?
Yeah, it is, you're right.
Oof. So... I don't quite know how they're going to do it. Well, maybe have a think before next week's pod when we're predicting it. Have a look back over the game tape. But I think they will have something. They'll have a little trick.
Yeah, they've always got something. Wales have a similar problem to England, which is they're completely reliant on a handful of players. Now, if you remove... Ken Owens or Alwyn Jones or both of them from the team, that pack is completely insipid. It has no bite, it has no ferocity, it has nothing.
No leadership as well.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's pretty important that those two play.
Yes.
And, you know, if they get everyone out, they might be able to hold down England. I can't see it. I just can't see it. I think England are going to be far too physical for them.
Just jumping back, Boris de Chunderer has tweeted a screenshot that he took of yours previously, JB, where you say, and I quote, JB, if Farrell is captain, this is going to be a dreadful Six Nations. This is you on the 17th of January. If Farrell is captain, this is going to be a dreadful Six Nations. Lots of chippy behaviour, protesting and ref, protesting to the ref and hunting for high shots. You have been warned, England.
Well, you know, it's still the same. But you know, if he's not under any pressure, he's not going to do it. You know, he can afford to be an angel. But it wasn't that long ago that we were in the autumn, and that's exactly what he did. Wasn't that long ago that I watched him at the AJ Bell, and it's exactly what he did.
Yeah.
So,
and on that, Michael Walsh has tweeted at Rugby Podcast and said, JB, what's your preferred flavour of humble pie?
Oh, good.
Oh, yeah, you also bet on Global Bro Sports.
Our WhatsApp group?
A Rugby WhatsApp group that we're in together, one of many. That you bet 2 pints with our dear friend of the pod, CJ, that Italy would beat Wales.
Yeah, didn't happen either.
When are you going to be recorded and
sending
those pints?
When I'm out next.
So before we leave England, France, Johnny Wilkinson, have you noticed how he's sort of becoming slightly less dishevelled every week? Last week, it looked like he had hat hair.
Yeah,
he did. Looked like he'd been wearing a woolly hat, took it off just before he went on telly. This year, he's got a haircut, but like his beard's sort of a little bit dishevelled. He's sort of getting gradually more handsome through the tournament.
Almost as if his wife has started watching him on TV and thought, like, no, no, no.
You are not going out in that.
Exactly. And his mum's watching him.
And so I think Wilkinson and Brian O'Driscoll are two of the best.
Why is Sir Clive Woodward so maligned for his analysis?
Well, no, I'm malign Sir Clive Woodward for wearing a tie with a button-down collar. I mean, that's just basic, isn't it?
It is basic.
So you're going to wear a tie, you wear a whatever that type of collar is that you wear ties with.
Hang on. No, but let's just go back to that, because he gets a lot of stick. And for my mind, like, he is probably one of the best rugby intellects of a generation.
Well, so
I'll answer this, but tie it in with a question that we've been sent on Twitter, which was basically saying that, I'm going to find the name of the person, bear with me. Oh, yeah, here we go. Witty Ed has said, ITV coverage is getting an earful on Twitter, in brackets, cesspit. Do you think it's justified, as I think the coverage is good? And you already started the point I would have made to that, which is like, it's got Bod and Johnny Wilkinson, for goodness sake, but carry on with Sir Clive as well.
Well, Sir Clive is interesting because...
Sorry.
Thank you. So, unquestionably, in 2003, he was streets ahead of everyone.
Yep.
So, how do I answer this the best way? So, I went to a law seminar on Tuesday last week, and I was chatting to one of the guys who presented it beforehand. I hadn't met him, but just chatting kind of over a coffee. And really nice bloke, got on very well with him. And he started presenting, and he didn't... So, he's explaining limitation of liability in construction contracts. So, what is quite a basic principle. But he explained it in a way that... Even though I understand the principle, I couldn't get the points that he was making because he didn't make his points accessible. Now, to move that forward to Sir Clive Woodward, I don't question that his insight and his analysis and his rugby intellect is incredible. But for me, he never explains it or doesn't often explain it, so I get the picture that he's seeing. And that's something that I think certainly Bod is one of the best at. I think... Benkei does something similar. Flatman does something similar. Austin Healy
is the best.
Austin Healy.
Simply the best.
He is the best.
Austin Healy, 90% of the time, yes. There is 10% where he makes these kind of belligerent points.
There was a great one with Sapuongo. He's like, he will never, you know, you can never score from that sort of position.
Yeah, yeah.
Bang.
But he always like double downs and triple downs on him. But yeah, so that's the bit for me that maybe it's because I'm so far behind Sir Clive Woodward in terms of rugby intellect, but he doesn't explain it in a way that I get it.
I wonder if it's kind of like asking the CEO of AstraZeneca to explain the intricacies of developing a cancer drug at laboratory level. So like, yeah, you know, Sir Clive Woodward assembled this great team. He has coaches doing this, that and the other. He has analysts, he has everything. But actually, what his role was to bring this team together and then oversee the whole thing like a CEO. And actually, maybe he doesn't get the ins and outs of, you know, the ruck or exactly...
Or maybe he's very good at explaining it to experts.
Yeah.
Because he's explaining it to a guy that is an expert at managing the ruck.
I want this outcome. Go and get me that outcome.
Yeah. It's just... I don't know if anyone else gets that feeling. And maybe it's on me. Maybe it's on him not explaining it in kind of layman's terms.
Mm.
But I guess that's the whole point of broadcasting, rather than narrowcasting, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Oh, I love ITV's coverage and I choose it over BBC.
100%.
100%. So I don't get the criticism. Yeah, and people lazily going, oh, there's an advert before kickoff.
I like the advert. What else am I going to do? Well, at least show me what goods and services I could possibly purchase.
But equally, and being someone that works in commercial radio, this always bugs the crap out of me. One, you see shed loads of adverts on the BBC for their own stuff.
Yeah.
But you don't think of them as adverts.
Oh, the BBC podcast's out? What?
Yeah, exactly. the number of times, God, when I used to do a breakfast show and I'd sit down on like a Sunday night getting ready to go to work and do my breakfast show the next morning, and there'd be a massive primetime advert for my competitor about 9 p.m. on BBC One. Oh, right, that's about half a million quid's worth of advert right there.
Yeah, cheers.
Great, cheers, thanks for that. No, but so you see adverts and you don't think about them as adverts. But secondly, it's not free. The BBC's not free. You're paying for it.
Don't start me, Tim. Why are you doing this? Why are you doing this? Why are you needling me in this way? Stop it.
It winds me up.
Stop it.
The narrow-mindedness. It's fantastic that it's on terrestrial TV. It's fantastic it's on terrestrial TV, and I think ITV are nailing it.
Here's the point that I make, right? Same with club owners, too. They're, oh, yeah, you too much sponsorship, or, you know, clubs are at the whim of a club owner. Like, who do you think pays for all this? You know, it isn't free. It isn't the fans coming through the gate. There's simply not enough money. There's not a stadium big enough and fans willing enough to pay that much in order to pay for all of this stuff which we all enjoy. So, you know, calm down and just watch it. Don't get upset because you've got one advert or two adverts before kickoff, which you would do nothing for anyway.
That said, if you want... we've got an amazing situation where you can support the podcast and get something amazing for yourself.
Yeah,
as well.
Speaking of adverts.
That's awesome. With Cornerstone, who are, we believe, the best razor that you can get. And there's plenty of reasons not to like other razor brands because they're trying to throw politics down your throat when all you want is a really, really good shave around your throat. Mm. So get a Cornerstone razor in a beautiful presentation box delivered to your door with six fantastic razors in a lovely Cornerstone cartridge with your free aluminium engraved shaft, your initials on it. Be a perfect present. Maybe drop a hint that your missus should get it to you for Valentine's Day, whatever.
What a wonderful gift. Yes.
Cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers. That's cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers. £4, less than a pint. Get involved. Or, of course, if you go to the checkout, it is...
Egg 10
at checkout.
Yes.
Very good.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact... You can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Excellent.
Does anyone want to make any more points that we've not already made about Italy-Wales?
It's disappointing for Italy.
It's disappointing for both teams. So Italy not getting a losing bonus point. Neither team getting a four-try bonus point in what was described before kickoff as near-perfect conditions to play rugby in.
Yeah.
Neither team seeming to have kind of the desire or the capability to... play enough rugby to get four tries in near-perfect conditions.
They were both rubbish. They were just both rubbish. Italy were really disappointing because you'd have thought that they would seize on this opportunity. Their pack actually is pretty good on paper. And they were about 10 kg heavier than Wales. Not that size is everything, but you know they are athletic, they're fit, they're good forwards with loads of experience. And on the Welsh side, you had lads like Elliot D, who will be good in a few years' time, but he's not there yet. You know, you got
that wasn't one of the British Lions, Elliot D, was it? Oh
no,
it was
Kristen Dacey.
Yeah,
they've got that many good players. They can leave British Lions, not amazing. Even in the squad.
You know, like Wainwright, Adam Beards in there, Jake Ball, people like that. I mean, good club players, not amazing internationals. And it's like they just couldn't be bothered to put it to them. I don't know why they were. You know, they were so flat, but they just were.
So, overall, do you think, and hindsight's 20/20, but when you actually look at the big pictures of the World Cup, do you think Gatland made too many changes, which sort of stunted the continuity, and that could be a problem going ahead to England when presumably there'll be loads more changes back. Or looking at the bigger picture in the World Cup, do you sort of say, fair enough, actually, that we could look back on that as a masterstroke?
Too many changes for me.
Yeah, I'm more inclined to go with the former.
I would have liked to see half the number of changes, perhaps.
Yeah, Gallen's a big picture guy, and I tend to give him the benefit of the doubt for everything. And I'll give him the benefit of the doubt for this as well, because he's the best coach maybe ever. So, you know, he can do what he wants. The team's performance was woeful. You see, he still won. And I'm guessing what you'll take from that is you can't play international. But maybe there was something from one of those players where he says, actually, yeah, you're good enough. And then it'll be worth it because he's got a Six Nations win. And hopefully he's going to have a couple more options come the World Cup. And I think that's the overall strategy.
The problem I would have with that statement is if you've made that many changes, however many it was, 10 plus changes to a first 15, and you've got combinations that have never played together and are never likely to play in any normal circumstances, how can you isolate and say, not good enough, not
it's
good
also
enough?
It's also not fair for the player, is it?
Yeah, exactly.
I completely agree with that.
That is my point.
And so, like, Jonah Holmes is a good example.
Yeah.
I don't think he played particularly well. Honestly, he's a very good club player, but is he an international? Time will tell. Maybe. I don't know. But he's got a lot better chance of playing international if the full Welsh pack is out and, you know, he's on the end of, you know, great ball and so on and so forth.
Yeah. That is my exact point. Tom Youngs as well.
Yeah.
Thomas Young. Who is a great player. I really, really like Thomas Young. He did not have a particularly good game. He got pinged a number of times. He took his try. It was disallowed, wasn't it?
I can't remember. I honestly can't.
Try that was disallowed well.
This game is so badly faded in my mind. I seem to remember him kind of growing into the game, actually. He did do all right around the breakdown towards the end. He got a couple of good steals. He got one very good steal, actually, where he went underneath the body rather than...
Yeah, he got pinged a couple of times for it, though, for not listening to the referee, where you'd get the extra second at club level. You don't get it.
Josh Navidi is 100% not an eight.
Yes, correct.
He's very energetic. The guy I would like to see more of is Seb Davis. I think him coming into the Welsh team would be good. And I didn't really think much of the scrum half.
Alad
Davis.
Yeah.
Truth be told, so there you go. But Dan Bigger looked not very much like Dan Bigger.
Yes.
At all.
You used to make the point of, if you put him in the squad with Dan Carter and Johnny Wilkinson,
that is so true,
and Johnny Sexton, he'll be the best.
Yep.
Which this does. This is a reverse example of that.
Yeah,
you put him in the squad with Elliot Dean and Wainwright,
slices it into touch. Just doesn't care. He doesn't care enough. It's not big enough for him.
Yeah,
he's got to start bigger against England, I think.
I think he will do
100%.
And
as poor as Bigger was,
although it was interesting to see the kind of reverse stability. Bigger off the bench against France. Because I would say you want Anscombe to come off the bench because as broken field runner, he's more explosive, more exciting, can open up more opportunities. But if you want to close out the game, if you get a lead or get close to a lead and you want someone to close out a game, there are a few better than Bigger.
Anscombe, people think he's a second coming. I don't think he is. I think Pratchell is going to be the more attacking option. If you wanted to do that, I'd start with Pratchell and then bring on Bigger. Or do you know what I'd do? Start Bigger and then finish with Bigger.
That's a good option.
That is my number one option for pretty much everything that Wales do.
Yeah, and if Bigger gets injured, you get Anscombe on for a bit, you get some painkilling injections into Bigger.
Exactly.
You give him a blood capsule.
Yeah, you fix him up. Yeah, you've got to get him back on the field.
There you go.
Have we talked enough about Wales?
We've talked way, way, way too much about Wales, Italy.
Before we move on to Scotland, Ireland, there's a couple of things I forgot. One, Sinclair, when he did the little hit on the top of the head.
Stupid.
It was, but did you not see
Kyle Sinclair, wasn't it?
Itteria did before. He sort of swiped him across the face.
So that was interesting. It goes back to your point last week about the French TV crew not showing replays of the events that incriminated French players.
Yeah.
The English TV, the media, didn't show Sinclair getting slapped when Nigel Owens was asking for the footage.
He did get a slap.
Did he get a slap?
He did get a slap.
So I didn't see it.
He did get a slap.
Yeah, but Sinclair is an adult, okay? He's an adult and an international rugby player. Just don't do it.
He also just, like, he didn't punch him. He just sort of grabbed...
Yeah, but just don't touch people's heads.
Yeah.
Didn't James Haskell get yellow carded for that?
Yeah, but it's sort of, that would be a soft yellow card if you got one for that. Anyway,
of course it would be, but who's to say it's not like the World Cup final?
Sir Clive was saying he should have done. Yes, I take your point.
I think he probably should have.
And also,
if it's a closed fist, that for me is a yellow card. No matter how much force there is, closed fist.
He grabbed the scrum hat.
So. But hang on, who got the yellow card for pulling the scrum hat off?
I don't know.
Did Hassan? Was it Mahler? Did Mahler pull the scrum cap off? Haskell?
Off Haskell?
Yes, he did.
Has someone got a yellow card for that?
You can't do that, sir. You can't do that. That was that, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And then, he squirted water.
Yeah, that was it.
And then, Mahler must have got a yellow card for that.
No, surely not.
Someone's scrum hat went, and Mahler doesn't wear a scrum hat, right? So, someone threw James Haskell's scrum hat. One of those two gets yellow carded. And the funny thing is, when Haskell says, you can't do that, squirting the water at me, I'm pretty sure Danny Care picked up a water bottle and squirted water at him, which is bloody brilliant.
Yeah. The other one is, I think it was in the huddle, just England have started having a huddle at half time before they go in, and there was this lovely moment. I'll have to go back and watch it again. I don't think I imagined it. I might have got the moment wrong, but Mark Wilson, you hear the camera's right near him, and you hear Mark Wilson just go, how good is this? I really love it. And have you seen what people have been doing with his Wikipedia page?
Yes, I have.
Mark Wilson says he can play either blindside flanker or at number 8. He's an absolute physical specimen with the potential to be the toughest man in world rugby. No nightclub bouncer could take on this unit, etc.
Did you see the video of England on the Watt bike with Mark Wilson going for it?
No.
Oh, it's a good video. You'll appreciate it. Some good triceps.
I really do like Wilson. I mean, I wish England was more... I wish there was more Wilson in England.
I was wrong about Daly. I was wrong about Wilson.
You weren't wrong about Wilson. You've been talking about Wilson for 4 years.
No, I haven't. I didn't think he'd be this good for England. I've been talking Rob Shaw and how much I love Rob Shaw.
I honestly think, right, the first time that we mentioned Wilson for England was when we were in the... I distinctly remember it in the XFM studios. So we were talking about 2 or 3 years ago that we were calling for
at least... Yeah.
No. I've always said he's great, but I never thought he'd be this good.
I mean, it would be difficult to imagine actually that you could have this much of an impact.
Yeah, but it's part of it is that back. So the back row right now is near perfect balance
now,
for a back row.
I don't want to divide the country here because God knows there's enough dividing the country as it is already. But do you think part of Mort Wilson's appeal is sorry if you're down south that. Northern grit, just like you know, like same as the best of Owen Farrell is that horrible northernness, and the worst is the fact that he's been down at Saracens and he's a bit chippy now. Whereas like Wilson is is that pure Cumbrian workman like gritty, tough, nails hard, but he doesn't pipe up too much. He's grateful to be there, and I think a lot of guys sort of forget that gratefulness.
Just gets on with it, doesn't he?
Just gets on with it.
I'm not sure how much I'd attribute to the northernness.
About
100%?
80 to 90%.
What about the Curry Boys?
Yeah, again, hard, northern lads.
Cheshire.
Well-educated.
I don't know. I was going to say, they're not so northern, are they? I mean, they're incredibly talented, and they're born in Cheshire. Born and raised in Cheshire, but they're not gritty. They're
somewhere.
Not gritty.
Oh, they are pretty gritty, mate.
They were educated at a very good school. It's not gritty. They weren't in the gritty north.
No, no, they weren't. They're not rugby league north, are they?
No, as
we call it.
No chance.
Not that gritty. Come on.
Hang on.
They're more Chawton. They're more Chawton where you live than Oldham where you work.
No, they're more like Sandbatchy, I guess.
Exactly.
But hey, Diamond thinks that they're gritty, and Diamond knows a thing or two about gritty players.
He's, don't get me wrong, on the field he's as gritty as anyone, as he proved by trying to get the England flag literally on his face.
Oh my word! The blood. I tell you now, I reckon all but one of the papers will lead with that image
on the back page.
I'd say so, wouldn't you?
It wouldn't surprise me. It's a hell of an image.
It is amazing.
It's just how quickly it opened up.
Yeah,
because you watch the hit, and I think it was it.
That's the picture.
Yeah, It was either Ramos or Entomac, or maybe Pinard. He was one of those young French outside backs. Carried the ball in, and it was a clash of heads. It was either...
Entomac, I think it was, actually.
Was it? Yeah. It was chin on head, chin on forehead. But it just opened up in seconds.
And the best thing about Tom Curry, of course, is that there's two of them. Whisper it, there's two of them. And, you know, the other one might not be... Ben might not be getting much airtime now because he's stashed away in deepest, darkest sail. But he's also a very, very good player. Very good player.
Well, that's probably a good point to say, to remind you that we will have two podcasts this week. One about domestic rugby, where we'll be talking, looking ahead to the Premiership, which returns this weekend, and a little bit of a salary cap deep dive.
Mm, indeed.
Which has been on a lot of people's minds after the signing of Elliot Daly to Saracens.
Yeah.
So we'll get into that. So just hit subscribe on the feed and keep an eye out for that one. But Scotland-Ireland, I love this game.
Loved the first half.
First half, yeah.
I was playing second team rugby, so I didn't see it.
Mm.
Not that I was dropped. There was no first team, just FYI.
You just wanted a game.
Yeah, yeah. I wasn't dropped.
You didn't drop yourself.
I did not drop myself. And I played on the wing, too.
Nice.
Would you like to hear what the message was from my ex-coach after watching me play?
Go on.
Well, I'm not going to read you the whole thing, because that would be humble bragging, but I'll read you the first part. You've not got great speed or fitness anymore.
You crossed the whitewash, didn't you?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That was class. Oh, there is a second... There is a however, but I'm not going to read you that.
Were you like a young Matt Banahan?
I was more like Matt Banahan giving Waisaki Naholo a piggyback, if that improved them in any way. If that was an advantage. No, to be fair, I'd describe my style of player as Matt Banahan, if Matt Banahan was playing level 7 second team rugby.
Is there a little bit you feel that would be curious to know? I wonder what I'd be like if I just went out and pulled a strip on and played next weekend.
Well, we know, we saw it in America.
Oh yeah, first touch of the ball, JB breaks through, offloads to me.
Boom, try.
I do the rest.
Game over, should have come. It was a great weekend.
Admittedly, that was just about the lowest standard of rugby I've ever played.
To be honest, this second team game that I played, it was against Altrincham Kersal, a great club, but second team rugby is such a level down. Even if you're playing a club a level up, the second team rugby is such a level down. I thought, I've wasted so many years in my early 20s playing second team rugby. Goodness me.
I missed the boat. There used to be one rugby match which I would have loved to have taken part in. There used to be a BT Sport versus Sky.
I know, yeah. Were you invited to this? Yeah. Were you going to play for BT?
It never happened.
No. Sky was out anymore.
I don't know. It's just, I think it's just one of those that fizzles out, but that would have been...
No, Sky bottled it big time. That's why I weren't interested.
Any one man in particular?
All of them.
All
of them. En masse.
Right, we've dodged it enough. Scotland,
yeah.
Ireland.
Oh, yeah.
Right, well, I'll tell you what, let me bridge the gap between the two games that are worth talking about. By starting, I mean, you mentioned there was a couple of uses of the TMO which were a little questionable in the England game. Potentially, Johnny May hooked an arm round Untermack for the Farrell try. Potentially,
yeah, I'm okay with
try,
that one.
The penalty try, not really a penalty try.
Yeah, because the ball had already passed. So the Johnny May hooking the arm for the Owen Farrell Farrell try, fine, let that go because I don't think it would have affected it. I don't think it should have been a penalty try for Ashton because he's missed the ball.
Yeah.
He's then tackled. And even if he managed to gather it from that situation, Entomac and others were all around him.
Yeah.
So I think Nigelians jumped the gun on that one.
I agree with that. However, it was pretty good on the whole in the England game. That aside, and I don't like laying into refs and TMOs, but I thought it was dreadful, Ireland-Scotland.
I thought Romain Poit
was really poor.
The use of, so you flagged it on Twitter, but the use of the advantage
was
interesting. There was one in particular where Ireland had a penalty advantage on the 10-meter mark, just inside Scotland's half. They then had a 2-on-1 that Carney blew. So it was Jacob Stockdale and Carney going on. I think it was Kinghorn at that point, that they blew. That should never go back for the penalty. That should be, sorry lads, you've had your chance. You've had a clear
try-scoring. You had a chance to score.
Yeah, a clear try-scoring opportunity. The advantage is over. you've lost it. And so that one in particular, I thought was, it was the wrong application and wrong outcome.
And that happens a lot. And that really bugs me. It happens a lot. Like it can, you make a material gain in territorially, and then you have an opportunity which you mess up.
Yeah.
The penalty isn't a safety net.
Yeah.
That you can go way back for. And I thought he did that a bunch of times, and it bugs the hell out of me. But also there was a lot of knock-on advantages, which, well, how much more advantage do you want? 30 metres and you go back for a knock-on advantage?
Yeah.
You're having a laugh.
That is nonsense, actually.
How much advantage should be played then? I didn't see it, so I don't know.
So knock-on advantage, I say...
Because it's
not even a phase, a pass, go. Play on.
Because it's
taking the place of a scrum, which is just a way to restart the game.
Certainly, if you get over the advantage line, knock-on should be
either over
gone.
The gain line or one phase is fine by me.
And penalty advantage, it's that empathy and you've got to feel it, but it's this keeping the penalty advantage for so long, and when there's territorial advantage, and particularly the times it bugs me the most, and you see it a lot, and there were, like exactly as you described, Carney to Stockdale, they blew it. They could have scored a try, and they blew it.
Carney did that a couple of times, actually.
There are times in games where there's a penalty advantage, a team drop the ball over the try line, and they go back for penalty advantage. It's like, how much more advantage do you want? Yeah.
So England had that one with the Bamba high tackle, and I thought, well, you know, they've pretty much scored a try here, and if they haven't scored a try,
yeah,
that's advantage over for me.
Yeah,
but they would have gone back for that advantage. So yeah,
the high tackle was inside England's own half.
Yeah,
so I'd say I'd rather France have the ball,
scrum France on the 5 meter.
Yeah, exactly.
What do you want, boys?
Yeah.
So I thought it was poor. Also, the use of the TMO. Use of the TMO was there was one, the Johnson attempted try that was disallowed. Now, actually, the right decision was made. There was a knock-on about 25, 30 metres back. However, the referee, and I thought we'd got this sorted in the summer with the relationship between the referee and the TMO. The TMO is just there to do what the referee asked them to do. Roman Poit said, I just want to check if there was a knock-on over the line, scoring the try. And the TMO took it upon himself to say, no, I've seen a different knock-on 30 metres back. Yeah, let me show you that.
Forward pass?
Forward pass, yes. Yes, that's right. That's right. Yeah, you're right. And so the TMO went over the referee's head. And, I mean, fair enough, it did actually happen. But it was like, come on, we've been through this.
Yeah.
There were some other refereeing decisions, or refereeing decisions and non-decisions. So there was the Carberry forward pass.
Yes.
Which was a phenomenal pass. It might have gone forward, but momentum law, it was a perfect pass. It was a brilliant break.
Interestingly, the same people on Twitter...
Here
last
we go.
Week,
oh, buckle up, boys.
Too right. So last week, the pass to Henry Slade for a try, which was a wonderful try for England.
And here we go.
Was a back, oh, God. Was a legal pass, but due to the momentum law and due to the laws of physics... The ball travels forward despite being a legitimate rugby pass. A lot of Irish blog, and I'm not going to say fans. There was a few fans, but actually,
no, they are fans. You can't say that. No, you don't get to dictate who the fans are.
No. Do you know the main offenders are people like balls.ie and Three Red Kings?
Hang on,
people like this.
No. You can't have it both ways. You can't on the one hand slam the BBC because they're non-commercial and so on and so forth, and then slam these guys because they're just giving people what they want. And they do want it, and they do believe it, especially people like Three Red Kings. They're genuine fans.
Yeah, they are genuine fans. But as a result, when the laws of physics don't apply, and they don't believe, they think the Earth is flat when England have a pass, and then suddenly are completely silent.
Why does
on a Joey Carberry pass that if they want the same laws applied, as in the ball has to literally travel backwards to be a backwards pass, well, Carberry's was way further forward.
Why does it matter?
Both of them are fine.
Why do you care? Why?
I know. I really need to get.
You don't
off
need to. Yeah.
I need to get off the Twitter cesspit.
It's fine.
I really
you
do.
Fine. Honestly, nobody needs to worry about it. They're both perfectly okay passes.
Oh no! I know. I know that. They don't realize.
Don't worry about them. Don't worry.
Right, you're right.
Don't
worry. Right. Actually, do you know what? You're absolutely right.
There we go.
Of all the times of year, the Six Nation is the one where you can be most one-eyed, biased partisan. Because I actually. it's the one time of the year that I wouldn't mind, or I don't mind listening to, say, Jiffy or Brian Moore commenting on Wales and England, respectively.
For God's sake!
Yeah, they kicked it away again!
He had a... so I watched the highlights, the BBC highlights, after watching the ITV coverage of the England game. And there was one time where... I can't remember what he was saying, but he was basically ranting at... Uge, what are you doing, Uge? Where are you? Uge, where are you?
Yeah, I would hate to be a French commentator this weekend. No, I've got to say, I quite like the Irish content because people obviously like it. They download it in their absolute droves.
But what I want to know is, do they believe what they're saying? Because I'm not saying anything to try and get clicks or downloads or get people talking.
I don't know about that. I mean, I've seen our Twitter over the last few days, and I wasn't sure if I was reading Wales Online. I mean, what is this? So I'm not sure.
No. So, okay, fine. Twitter's a very different beast. On our podcast, right, I don't say anything that I don't actually believe.
Yes.
I don't say anything which I don't believe. It doesn't make it right.
No, but like, I don't want to call out other professionals.
Get them, Tim. No, fine. Go for it.
So, for example, Alan Quinlan.
Yeah, go on.
Alan Quinlan, when he will go off on one when he sees some foul play, but never when it's an Irishman doing foul play.
Different rules, mate. Different rules.
And I'm sort of split between actually loving the partisanship, as Phil just said.
Perfect time of year for it. And
just getting really frustrated at the... You're not credible if you can't do it both ways.
You know, I'm deaf to sort of, I don't really hear that. I mean, if it's really obvious, like the Brian Moore one, but I mean, that's so obvious, it's famous. Like, I don't really hear Jiffy being that partisan, which sounds ridiculous to anyone who listens, but I don't.
So here's an example. There's my Twitter timeline has not been full of GIFs of Peter O'Mahony taking out Stuart Hogg, and no mention was made of that in any commentary of Peter O'Mahony taking Stuart Hogg out of the game. I'm actually fine with it. I don't think there was any. I think it was all right.
I was going to mention that and one other incident. So I actually think Peter O'Mahony was trying to pull out.
Yeah.
I think he's trying to wrap his arms around the player. He's trying to wrap his arms around himself to get himself out of the way.
Duck his shoulder out of the way. I'm fine with it.
I think there was no case to answer there. I think he probably should have got a yellow card slightly later on in the first half, I think, where he just cynically lay on top of Scotland Rook 5 yards out. He knows exactly what he's doing.
Yeah. I'm far more irritated by the cynical not rolling away or killing the ball than I am by a late shot.
Play the ref. So if I was an Ireland fan, I'd be saying that is absolutely perfect. You've stopped the momentum, stopped a try scoring opportunity, and you've only got away with a penalty.
Yeah. Well done.
Well done. That is perfect.
World class.
Yeah. World class flanking play. That is superb. Yeah,
I want him a yellow. That to me is a yellow card or oil. But that annoys me much more.
So I didn't see any gifts of that. But actually, just for the record, I think Peter O'Mahony was fine on the thing with Hogg. I agree with you on the one on the try line. But I saw so many gifts and there's so many articles now. Oh, look at teams targeting Johnny Sexton. It's outrageous. And the one where Johnny Sexton takes it right up to the line and puts Stockers
through.
They've
really got to you, haven't they?
Put Stockers...
looking for people's votes?
So Johnny Sexton beautifully put Stockers through on an inside ball and then got smashed.
Was it Dell who smashed
it? Yeah, totally legally. Again, 100%, he was totally committed.
Sexton plays... The way to play as a fly half is to put your body on the line because you draw in defenders.
Yeah. And he does.
If he'd have given that pass half a second earlier so he doesn't get smashed,
Stockers isn't through.
Yeah. But, my boy Stockers. What a try that was.
So Roger Grace tweeted us and said, Sexton, smashed a bits fairly or not?
Yeah, because he's on a rugby pitch.
Yeah.
So
exactly. It wasn't late. Dell was committed.
Exactly.
He knew that by drawing him, he would put Stockers through. I think that was fair. I think he was targeted, but I think it was all above board and fair. In the same way that the best players are.
Yeah. Do you know a little bit of it, JB? And I think what it is I'm slightly defensive of my sport in general. I'm ready to go because last week there was all the rubbish about what was all the controversy after the England game? People go, the Manu Tuilagi hitting the ruck.
Oh, right. Okay. The now we can get out.
So I think this is so this is basically where this is all coming from is things like Manu Tuilagi hitting a ruck becomes suddenly the bone of so much contention for people after the game.
And God forbid that you criticise Ben Ryan, because if you criticise Ben Ryan, I know you'd never do that because you used to play with Newbury. Did you?
Oh, I've not mentioned that before. But I used to play under Ben Ryan. Right. Yeah.
So he started this rather annoying trend, which is the ruck is like the Wild West. Now, every time I see someone hitting a ruck badly, I can say, is it legal? Is it illegal? But every time I see it, I don't think that's a Wild West. I look at that and I think, that's a perfectly reasonable decision if you want to clear out a man. Whether it be legal or not legal, I can see it being a reasonable decision. So all we are clogged up with now are people talking about how dangerous the ruck is. It needs to be sorted out. I remember a few years ago when scrimmaging was going to lead to 50% of the population, including non-rugby population, ended up paralysed. So, like, these things get so, you know, they get so hyperbolic that they no longer matter. And the ruck is exactly that now. So Manu Tuilagi hitting this ruck, it's just a symptom of this annoyingness that we have to continually tweak the rules of rugby until there's nothing left.
Yeah, and it's the mission creep, and the reaction to that bugged me. So, I you're absolutely right, and I'm gonna. Do you know what? I might just like take Twitter off my phone in the
You've
week.
Been threatening this for weeks, Sims. Just do it. You'll be so much happier.
I would. I really would. I've got. Do you know what? I'm busy. I've got so much else on. There's so much more valuable.
So many people to correct on Twitter.
There's so many people that actually that's the problem with it is everyone has this equal voice and actually they're not equal, are they? And I'm not saying my voice is worth anymore. That's not my point.
It's kind of what you said.
But actually, you know what? People, pundits, and people that have played the game at a very high level. Actually, I will listen to them more than some no mark in an armchair who's got Twitter.
Yes, I think that's pretty wise. I think that's exactly how you should use it, actually.
Yeah. And no one should listen to me either.
Scotland Island.
Yes, sorry.
One more thing on Scotland Island. Remarkably stupid, I thought, of Greg Laidlaw to call out the ref.
That's where I was going with
exactly.
This.
Exactly, well. Yeah.
Remarkably stupid.
Yeah.
It is just unnecessary to do it in that forum.
Does he really believe, and I suspect he does, that Roman Pratt does not like Scotland?
I think in the heat of battle, he probably at that time did.
All right. So if that is the case, okay, and your goal is to win rugby games, and you honestly believe Roman Pratt does not like you, I would suggest going the opposite way around.
Yeah.
I'm not saying, hey, Roman, you don't like us. How about getting to know the names of all of his kids? What he likes to do is like a hobby. By the way, not to know the names of his kids so you can threaten him, because that's really, you know, that's really dark. I didn't mean that. So you can like ask like how Johnny and Sarah are.
Little Marie looked good going to school the other day, Roman.
Yeah. Still dropping her off at 8:30, are you?
Yes. Interesting. In the pink dress on Tuesday, I see.
Excellent. No, not that. Right, buy him an apple, you know, do all those things.
Become a teacher's pet.
Yeah, I mean, literally, right, I know in my league, right, I know that one of the refs is a TA army officer. I know one of them is a curator of a museum in Birmingham. I know that one of them is a, what was he? Well, he was a school teacher. You've got to know them all. You've got to know all their names. You've got to be ultra nice all the time. And even when they get it wrong, just nod your head. And actually, even if they get it really wrong, say, that's a really good decision. Well spotted.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir. He's a professional.
Yeah, Chris Murray tweeted us at Rugby Podcast and said, for the sake of argument, let's agree Roman Poit was terrible. Is there anything to be gained from players saying so?
No. Well done, Mr. Murray.
I'm certain that Greg, on video analysis Monday morning, he will regret that decision.
Yeah. He should have said,
particularly when there's enough video footage to look at, where he might go, oh, do you know what? I probably left 6 or 9 points out there by not going for the posts.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. My bad.
And what can you do first? Yeah. Look at yourself and then work outwards.
There was some turnover on ruck ball in key positions. There was the Hugh Jones seat pass to Seymour in the corner of the first half. I wouldn't like to put all the blame on one of those two. On either one of them, because I think Seymour slightly overran it and Hugh Jones' pass was slightly behind him. Mm. But if that pass and the timing is perfect, it's try time. Stockers cannot get across to him, that's 5 or 7 points. So yeah. Those, yeah. We said it, I made a point about it a while ago. James Comey, the FBI director,
ooh,
when he was getting criticised by both the Hillary and Trump fans after the 2016 election, he was, by both of them, he was a single point of failure, because it's far more difficult, it's far easier to point at a single point of failure rather than look at myriad multiple layers of mistakes and errors.
Nuance should be the word of 2019. Nuance. Yeah.
So
it's like people, like, suddenly, again, we're in, I'm not saying anything politically, but like you would genuinely think that people actually believe the European Union isn't the most incredible, wonderful institution.
Oh God, where are we going here?
No, that's fine. Okay. I'm just saying.
Or like, complete evil institution, depending on how you read it. That's right.
I think that's the message we're taking away, is everything's binary.
The message I'm taking away is that is why
I understand it. That's one of the two.
That's why I like my fence. I can sit on my fence and I can have a foot in both camps and I can see the merits on both sides.
Yeah. There's nuance.
I think Gregor Townsend will be frustrated with Griglio's comments, and I think he will have his team working on some basics that cause them to miss points.
Yes, agreed. Entirely agreed. Although the one thing I think Laidlaw did brilliantly was a bit of shoe pie on Peter Omani when he had hands on the ball in the ruck. I love ruck justice. I got so excited about a bit of ruck justice that was allowed to happen.
Is that because you don't care about welfare?
Yeah, it's because I don't care if players have arms or hands or not.
What if Peter Omani, when he's 85 and arthritic, wants to take up the piano?
Yeah. What if he can't play Snap with his children, Tim?
Or his children's children?
Yeah. It's awful. What an awful human you are.
Ireland. So, Ireland needed a win.
Got the win?
They got a win. Ireland, certainly last year, I was talking them up as possibly the best team in the world. Definitely World Cup contenders, Six Nation Grand Slam hopes. Do you think this was a return to form? Do you think this was a notable progression? Or do you think this is, we're still seeing an Ireland off colour?
The latter.
I think they're slightly off green. I'm going to look at this slightly deeper, actually, and say it's just how rugby evolves. Everything has got a certain amount of time to run. It's all circular. So when we think the All Blacks are the greatest team on earth, yeah, they still might be, actually, there is a blueprint to beat them. And then they lose their confidence and they get a bit shaky and they can lose South Africa and they lose to Ireland again and so on and so forth.
Every now and again, Australia beats them when they play half a dozen flankers.
Yeah. Yeah. So like it does happen. And Ireland have been shaken. We all know what it's like to be in that team who you think is unbeatable. You know, even with lower levels, you're going really, really well, and you think, we are unbeatable, and you get beat. And it really shakes you for the next game. So they needed this win because they need to get back on track. It's a damn good Scotland team, but that's all it is. It's just the cyclical nature of rugby, and it will happen again.
The one thing I think when I think of Ireland is they will arrive at a World Cup, their players will be in great nick.
Yeah, and this is the other thing.
Because they won't be battered in the way that England players might be throughout the rest of the course of the season.
So that's a really interesting other point, which is there is not one system that is correct. And I think we're going to learn this over the next few years. So a few years ago, I'll just go back to the Heineken Cup, where Leinster the only Pro 14 team to make it through to the knockouts? This year,
it's three seasons ago.
Yeah, it's like it's the opposite. You see this period of this Irish dominance, then all of a sudden you see England absolutely spank Ireland. You think, well, actually, is it right that Ireland rest all of their players for so long? Were they slightly rusty? Is that the right way to go about things? So I don't know if you're right about that going into the World Cup. Maybe England are more battle hardened.
Another question for this game: whose loss was bigger? Both went off in the first half, Sexton and Hogg.
Hogg for me.
They're two very capable replacements.
Yeah.
Kinghorn and Carberry are superb replacements. I think maybe Hogg is right.
I just think the drop-off between Hogg and Kinghorn is far greater than Carberry and Sexton.
And you talk about barometers of Scotland performances. How many times has he been man of the match in a famous win?
Yeah, he always feels like he's a second away from a hamstring pull.
or a second away from breaking the line and going 60 metres.
Yeah, one of the two things is going to happen.
He's just on that edge, isn't he? Yeah.
Yeah,
probably Hogg. And actually, and that's, again, is a compliment to Carberry.
Yes, massively. And Carberry, who, one of his first involvements was to throw an intercept pass to Finn Russell, which led to the Johnson try. After that, he was superb. I thought he played really, really well and controlled the game excellently. So yeah, I'd agree. I think Hogg was actually a bigger loss. I was surprised when Maitland came in for King Horn on the wing, but maybe he does offer a bit more versatility.
Did Rory Best come off the field?
For Cronin, towards the end, I think. Yeah,
I think I would be looking towards the end of Six Nations. Here's something, maybe not that controversial. Maybe it is. I think I'd be looking for a different hooker to start in the World Cup.
So the problem with that is you then need a different captain.
Yes. Why do teams do this to themselves? I wonder if like the qualities to be a captain are so synonymous with older players who are nearly about to pack it in that you're sort of stuck with this guy who you're not sure is going to quite be there come the World Cup.
It's difficult. I think I might be wrong about this, but I think Best being an Ulsterman rather than a Munsterman or a Leinsterman does help the dynamics a little bit. Because if you picked a Leinster captain, it could feel a bit too...
Leinstery.
Yeah.
That's exactly one-sided. What happened in Australia.
Interesting
point.
So they had... There was a lot of chat, wasn't there, about Stephen Moore being captain because there was too...
He was Brumbies, not Waratahs or Reds, was it?
Too much representation from Waratahs.
Yeah.
Oh, maybe the Reds were good then. Maybe it was that. Maybe it was Reds and Waratahs. But there was definitely factions within the Australia camp.
So I think unless Bess has a monumental drop-off in form, which he's not, he is still playing some good rugby. He's not as explosive as Cronin. Never has been. But I think the balance is right unless Bess has a huge drop-off.
Who's the youngest captain in world rugby at the moment? In like tier one? Farrell?
27?
I mean, Hartley would presumably be captain if he came back, though. Alan Wynn's up there in age.
Hooper?
Harold Hooper?
25? No.
Oh, Hooper. Sorry, I'm thinking of Pocock. I did the same thing as...
Michael Hooper. Isn't Hooper the same age as George North?
Isn't Hooper the same person
27.
As Pocock?
27 Hooper. Is Etzebeth South Africa captain?
Oh, yes, he's very... Oh, no, actually, he's probably not that young either.
Is he South Africa captain?
I think he is, actually, yeah.
And is Pablo Matera, is he Argentinian captain?
No. Oh, I don't know about that.
Oh, surely it's Khaleesi.
Oh, yeah, of course.
No, he was captain, but he's not Springbok captain. He was matchday captain. I'm sure.
He's Springbok captain.
No, he did. He has captain Springboks, 100%.
He is the captain.
I'm sure he's not.
He
I'm
is.
Sure it's Atzabath.
No, he's the captain. Well, Khaleesi's they're the
both,
captain.
They're both 27 anyway.
Okay.
Same as Michael Hooper, same as Owen Farrell.
So anyway.
Is Pablo Matera? Ooh, he's 25, Matera.
And is he captain?
I seem to think he is.
And to think, Leicester Tigers let him go. It's all right. Leicester Tigers are absolutely stacked in the pack, so they're fine.
Well, they brought in the Crusaders lad that you mentioned last week.
Yeah, who is...
Jordan Taufau?
Not for this podcast. We'll talk about it next podcast.
Tuafua.
Let's talk about it next podcast.
Yes.
Okay.
We'll talk about that on the domestic pod tomorrow.
I think that's it then for the international, the Six Nations pod. Indeed. Did you see any of the other, the ARC, American Rugby Championship?
No, I saw none of it.
I saw a scrum.
Yeah.
What? Between Brazil and Canada. Oh, I'm going to look at it now. It's sexy. That Brazilian scrum. Oh, wow. Wait for it. Oh, my word.
Just complete destruction, isn't it? Amazing.
They're practically running the scrum down the field.
Do you think there's going to be any? It's going to be any championship coaches looking at those? At those props, Tim.
I would imagine so. I know we know one quite well.
Yeah. Do you reckon they'd be interested?
I reckon they might be.
Interesting. Argentina 15. Not Argentina, but A15 from Argentina.
Yeah.
Hammered United States 45-14.
Yeah, there was a live live stream on YouTube. I watched a little bit of it.
Did you?
Yeah.
How did AJ go?
Not from what I saw, not great, to be honest. It was mostly Argentina.
Paul Lezicki got a red.
Yeah.
Oh God, there's quite a few cards in this.
Right, I think we've exhausted all the fuel we've got on this Six Nations podcast. I'm going to go and delete Twitter.
Yes.
Well, I bet you don't.
But we are at Rugby Podcast right there.
Well, let's see if you deleted it by our next podcast, shall we?
Yeah, and you can find us there, just as you can find us everywhere else. Don't forget to hit subscribe, tell your mates, get yourself a Cornerstone Razor, and we will see you on the domestic podcast next time. Let the boys play.
Let the boys play.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.